I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to minute 111 of season 6 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Austin Pryor, a member of the Movies by Minutes community. Welcome back to my show. It's been 2 years. I mean, that's like four seasons.
Yeah.
That's like four seasons for me. But welcome back.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were here?
You
were here in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Is that the last one?
Planes, Trains.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another winter holiday movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, a different holiday.
Yeah, Thanksgiving to moving on to Christmas.
Yes.
Although I couldn't believe watching today, you know, given that, you know, peek behind the curtain, we're not actually watching this around the Christmas season. But I couldn't believe how long it takes for it to become a Christmas movie. We are in the Christmas minutes now.
Correct.
But it takes like an hour and 17 minutes before I timed it this time. I couldn't believe that.
You're saying before we actually show up on December 24th, 1945?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little hint of Christmas at the very beginning of the movie, but it's not. It doesn't have that Christmas feeling. It doesn't have a Christmas setting, except for maybe lights on the roofs at the very beginning of the movie,
right,
when people are making their prayers, praying for George, and then you know, a full hour, nearly in 20 minutes. So it's amazing, yeah.
Right. What's your background with this movie?
It's a big favorite of mine. It just wasn't on Irish TV that much growing up. It wasn't one that was just always on. And I remember I was living with a roommate in my 20s who, you know, it was a big movie for him. And I didn't really know if it was going to be just, you know, schmaltzy old Hollywood, you know, or if it was going to have something more to it. And then I was just really bowled over the first time I saw it. I love this movie. My other kind of way into it was, like, I was a massive Red Dwarf fan when I was a teenager, and that is like, it's, I don't know if you know the connection, but
not familiar with Red Dwarf at all.
So in the TV series of Red Dwarf, there's just one scene in one episode where Dave Lister, the main character, the last human alive, is talking to Arnold Rimmer, his bunkmate, who's a hologram of a dead human. And he's just saying, you know, if you're not crying by the end of this movie, you've got no soul, you know. And of course, then Rimmer goes into this kind of tirade about schmaltz and you know, sentimental garbage. And so I didn't know which side of the movie I'd come down on. Probably as a cynical, edgy teenager, I was more on Rimmer's side in this one, you know, even though he's kind of a loser character. But then in the Red Dwarf novels, they all put on these Better Than Life headsets that just take you to your dream world, your best life ever. And it's like a drug, like a virtual reality crossed with a drug kind of thing, you know? And people just get addicted and stay in this world forever. And Lister's world is Bedford Falls. And he finds himself where it is like perpetually Christmas Eve, and everybody, all these like small town characters just go around like breaking each other's hearts about how kind everybody's being, you know? And there's scenarios in it that I thought were from the movie, but they're not. They're just kind of riffs on the movie. Like there's a little boy who wants to buy a boat or something in the toy shop, and then everyone scrounges together a few pennies so he can buy the boat, and like, you know, Lister and the like local cop are just there both like just weeping and saying, "So beautiful, happy Christmas," you know. And then he goes home to his idyllic family, and he knows it's a fantasy, you know, but he can't leave tonight, not on Christmas Eve. But in Bedford Falls, it was always Christmas Eve. You know, that was his fantasy. It was always that time. And it just, like, the world of the movie was so brilliantly described in those kind of uneven novels. They're not amazing, but this was, like, one of the best parts of it. And so that was kind of, that was my, you know, entree into the world of It's a Wonderful Life. And I didn't kind of know that it would become one of my favorites, you know.
Well, that's good, isn't it? Is it something you watch? Do you try to watch it on a regular basis?
Most Christmases. I think this Christmas just went by without it, unfortunately. But it was a nice tradition every year for a while, because the IFI, the Irish Film Institute, there when I was living in Dublin, you know, they play it every year in their Dublin cinema, and I would go along. But now that I live in Galway, it's not like showing locally, but obviously I can, you know, sort it out myself, and I have the Blu-ray and all that. Mm-hmm. But definitely looking forward to introducing my daughter to it.
Do you do it as a family thing?
Yeah, it's more like a borrowed family thing that, like, my roommate that I was talking about who introduced me to the movie, he was going as a family, you know, and I kind of tagged along. And then the kind of found family of the roommates, we definitely made that a thing a few years, not every, you know what I mean, not religiously. But it was, it's a very special thing. But I just, like, I kind of need some alone time, because I am just a blubbering mess at the end of this movie. Not even the end. I don't even wait for the end before I'm crying.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, we're getting there. Hopefully these minutes, you know, won't make you start to cry.
I think I'll be able to get through these and keep a reasonably professional radio veneer.
I'm very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that. I mean, again, if you need to cry, I understand. But I don't know if the five episodes that we're going to be doing, you know, over the course of the next few days, really has much to cry about. Not. Maybe what happens to Violet, you know, maybe. Yeah, that's the closest.
Maybe, but no, these are not the heart string tugging moments. No,
right, exactly. Okay, so minute 111 begins with George having a revelation, and ends with George looking up and getting very confused about a sign. You know, I guess you can sort of say George is looking at a sign or looking for a sign. Yeah.
he's seeing the signs. Yeah.
That's right. So we ended things yesterday with basically they're in this bar, you know, where Nick is the bartender and stuff like that. Now, Nick is very snippy here to both Clarence and George. You know, he just, you know, again, he's in Pottersville. You know, this is the, you know, the alternate reality where everyone is obviously less nice than they are in the real Bedford.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the darkest timeline, and you need to toughen up in this town. You can't just be the nice Bedford Fall version of yourself. You gotta toughen up. And I think, like, Nick has the contrast in the way Nick speaks is so great. It's so entertaining, because he puts on a full on like gangster persona. You know, look here, you know, you get this gangster kind of like go away, kid, you bother me. That kind of he has. Yeah, it's more in tomorrow's minute. His line's coming up, you know. That's another thing. Is that what he says today?
No, it's in today's. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. But yeah, his voice is hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, for the last few days, Clarence was trying to figure out what he wants to drink, and that was causing problems. And then, Clarence mentioned the whole thing about that he doesn't have wings, and Nick is looking on. He's very cautious and confused about everything that's going on. And then, we ended things yesterday with Mr. Gower showing up and getting sprayed in the face with the seltzer bottle. And George
Oh, it's
tries to,
horrible.
it really is. George tries to intervene and says, What did? And he goes, Mr. Gower, look, it's George Bailey. Don't you know me? And Mr. Gower, who's really drunk, just looks at him and goes, No. And then Nick just screams in the background. You hear him say, throw him out, throw him out. Mr. Gower goes, hey, what is. And then George says, hey, Nick, isn't that Mr. Gower, the druggist? And he goes, oh, that's another reason for me not to like you. That rum head spent 20 years in jail for poisoning a kid. If you know him, you must be a jailbird yourself. And then he turns to two of his goons and says, would you show these gentlemen to the door?
Yeah,
So.
gentlemen. Yeah.
That's right. So first of all, it's very interesting the fact that the way that this conversation escalates.
Whole way that this George is still not getting it. He still not doesn't know that he's in this other world, and he's just unknowingly winding this situation up. He's like, I always feel for him in this situation because we, the audience, are much more aware of the danger here. We know how nasty this version of Nick is. We get the idea quicker than he does because we know we're watching a movie and that magic can happen and that you can, be in this world. But George is just like, no, wait a minute. He's trying to sort everything out and be his usual George self. And he's only just being like in back on last Friday's minute, he's only just started being a little bit cautious and maybe tone down talk of wings and stuff, but he still doesn't get it. He's still not like, because if I'm watching this going, get out, just get out of there, and you can talk to Clarence about this whole thing, and you're this is not a nice situation. It's not safe.
No, not at all. And I mean, it makes you like think about it. Okay, I mean, we talked about this. I think it was probably the beginning of last week. The idea that we're starting to see the changes in Bedford Falls slash Pottersville, based on the fact that George isn't there. But like we talked about the fact that it didn't make sense that it's not snowing. If George is not there, so the snow stops.
Yes.
But here. Is it guaranteed that Mr. Gower would have still poisoned the kid if George wouldn't have been there? Because someone else would have been working there at the time,
Yeah.
and maybe he would have
And
had
this
an
is.
adult there. Maybe he would have had someone, maybe he would have had someone who would have sent Mr. Gower home, knowing that his son had died. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different options of where you can take these things.
Absolutely. And that's how I tend to look at it as well. I tend to think about all these things because I'm thinking about the chain of cause and effect, and I'm thinking about, and basically we're applying science fiction logic to this. And this is not science fiction. This is an act of God, divine intervention. Well, at least the angels, I'm sure they got the okay from the big man to create this world to show George the effect he's had on people. So nobody stepped up. Nobody was George
That's
in
right.
this world. So
I actually.
we're not worried about the alternate timeline. We're
Right.
just worried about like what did George
That's
did.
right. And I mean, I looked it up to see, in New York State, someone who is convicted of first degree manslaughter can get up to 25 years in prison. So it sort of makes sense the 20 years that they talk about here. It seems logical. The way that they talk about
Yes,
it.
20 years, and maybe the extenuating circumstances, and he wasn't in his right mind, and but it's a horrible, horrible situation to think about. And Mr. Gower is such a, he has a real sweetness about him, but he is a very, he's a pathetic character in a lot of ways, and especially here, and we're shown, you know, what he would have become without George, and he is just like, and God, he does it well. I don't know the actor's name, but
H.B. Warner
just shows this kind of H.B. Warner. He just does this lost, confused, and there's just this deep sadness in him. But it is, you know, yeah. Yeah, I guess it's like, in one way, it's like the importance of community, because people like this, you know, need to be helped along and kind of propped up by others. But at the same time, it's like, this guy needed help. He needed help the whole time. And he was, you know,
right, and we also,
he nearly killed somebody.
We also know that George kept that secret. He never told anyone.
He kept that secret, which is kind of presented as like a very honorable thing. And it absolutely is in the world of the movie, and you can absolutely understand it. But it's like, that might not have been the best for Mr. Gower to have, like, to never kind of face up to the consequences of his addiction and to never have to, like, you know, address it in that fundamental way. Although I think he got, you know, we see a cleaner version of Gower for the other chunks of the movie, that I think he did kind of get his act together and he had other things to live for. So,
yeah, I think they did. So I looked up just really quickly to see if there, you know, any famous people that were actually, you know, poisoned you know.
Okay.
So
apart from Alexei Navalny, too soon.
Yeah. Well, this is the second time that he was poisoned. This time it unfortunately worked.
Yes, it's stuck. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I, again, just a few that I'm going to throw out here. So Socrates apparently died by poisoning, but he was sentenced.
Wow.
He was sentenced to death, and he decided to let him carry out the sentence himself. By drinking hemlock. This is what.
Do you know what he was convicted of?
Yes. In 399 BC, the Athenian government put him on trial, and they were charging him with corrupting the youth and refusing to acknowledge the Greek city-state's gods. And he was found guilty and was given a death sentence that he ended up carrying out himself instead of letting them do that. And so he was forced, or he drank poison, which was believed to be hemlock.
Wow. Never knew that. That's okay. Fascinating.
Awful. Okay, yeah, really. Ponce de Leon. Did you know? I mean, I know who Ponce de Leon was. He's the guy who was searching for the fountain
just
of
youth. About.
He was trying to find the fountain of
youth.
And, apparently he was shot by an arrow that was dipped in poison, and he ended up dying from his injuries. Oh. This Rasputin.
Eventually they got
him. Yeah. So they tried poisoning him, but they were serving his food and drink that was laced with potassium cyanide.
Jeez.
But in the end, he was very resilient. They needed to also shoot him and drown him before they could finally kill him, you know. So,
yeah. Rah, Rasputin.
That's right. then we have there were a bunch of others. There were some other interesting people that I saw on this list. I did see Navalny here, you know, but Slobodan Praljak.
Milosevic.
Praljak, who was also he's a Bosnian general who was convicted of war crimes in The Hague, and on the stand he just took out some poison and drank poison and died like a few hours later.
Crazy.
Yes. Alan Turing.
Turing, yeah.
So he committed suicide by injecting an apple with cyanide and took a bite of it.
Yeah.
There are people who claim that it was accidental, but I don't know about how that really works.
Yeah. Well, he was already, I mean, he had been chemically castrated by the government.
Right.
He was
I've seen the
convicted
movie.
of being gay. Okay, I haven't, but So I mean, we can't know what state, mental state he was put in by the chemical castration, which is, basically an experimental torture punishment that was done to him. So I think the Crown deserves some blame for his
Yes,
death as well.
that's probably true. Erwin Rommel, the desert fox. He also he committed suicide with cyanide after they found out that he was part of the plot to kill Hitler in 1944. Eva Braun, the wife of Adolf Hitler, also she committed suicide by taking a cyanide capsule. The Goebbels children.
Roberto Nazis will be here all
That's
day.
true also. The Goebbels children, they killed all six of their children and then killed themselves.
Oh,
Himmler,
disgusting.
Himmler also committed suicide by cyanide. Goring also. So yeah, all right, we'll skip over all of the rest of those Nazis that are on that list because there's a lot of them.
Oh my God,
So yeah, Mr. Gower got off easy, I guess, by when comparing him to all these other people who possibly who did this. So basically, at this point, Nick decides to really kick him out, and he and well, first of all, actually, I wanted to say something that. Why does Nick associate the fact that if you know him, that means you must also be a jailbird, and therefore I don't like you? Like, where is this coming from? It's really, really nasty.
But I guess he's like, George seems so familiar with him, and maybe he's not, I don't know how the timeline works out, but maybe he's not long out of prison.
Well, again, if this
So
is 25 years after 26 years. After Mr. Gower's son died. So it could be
okay.
that he's been out of prison 5 years.
So then, that's another reason.
Okay, I mean, I
You must
don't
be a jailbird
That's
too.
right.
I guess it's something you could like, it's kind of guilty by association. He's not really like reasoning out the likelihood of it. He's just, it's another thing to throw at this guy. Plus, I think like I think everybody is kind of freaked out by this guy, and they want to, nobody really wants to get to the bottom of why this guy is talking weird and saying all these strange things and seems to know everybody, because it's Bedford Falls, not Bedford Falls anymore, it's Pottersville, and it's
Pottersville.
a rough place, and he's probably some, he might be some nut job, or he might be some kind of con man, or you know what I mean? Either way, he's bad news, and we don't want to know about it, that kind
Right.
of thing. That's kind of the impression I get. Nobody's curious. Their curiosity has been knocked out of them by how tough and kind of dangerous this town is.
Right. Okay. That's fair. And so then Nick says to his goons, why don't you show these gentlemen to the door? So the first one says, "Sure, this way, gentlemen," and he like points to where they should be going. Now, what I found really interesting, I looked up to see who the actor is who plays this main, I guess you can call him a bouncer, and so it's an actor named Cy Schindel, who was born in 1907 and passed away in 1948. So basically, just two little over 2.5 years after this movie came out. And so I looked up and information about him. First of all, he died at the age of 41. So he was only 30, what was he, 38 when this movie came out, 39. He was relatively young at the time. He has 161 IMDb credits.
What?
And I mean, so he was very prolific with all the stuff that he did. He was a World War II veteran, and what happened was is that he was suffering from cancer, after he got back from World War II, and he wanted to help support his family, so he continued acting, even though he had terminal cancer. Yeah,
Wow.
and I mean, there's some very interesting things about him that I found out. So before he became an actor, he was a boxer, and
Ah, that makes sense with
that's
his
right.
physique,
And
yeah.
he actually worked for Mickey Cohn in LA. He was the debt collector for any loan sharking and gambling operations. So this guy really was a bouncer.
Wow, yeah.
When World War II broke out, he joined the army, and when he was in Guadalcanal, he got jungle rot, which was a skin disease, which later developed into cancer.
Oh, that's a nasty
And the
turn of events,
most
yeah.
interesting thing I found out about him was that he was in 35 of the Three Stooges movies.
Oh, cool.
He was like one of the people who would menace the Three Stooges. So he was in 35 of those movies. So that's just amazing thinking about the number.
Yeah, I'll have to watch out for them when I'm watching those again.
Yeah, seriously. So basically, these two guys, start walking them towards the door, and then the shot changes, and we see them outside. And now, did you notice that the way that the music,
Yeah.
changes a little bit
Yeah, I made a note of
as
it.
they're taking him out?
Yeah. Yeah, well, or maybe there's a cue before the
Yeah.
one. Is it as you're taking out? I just noticed, like, 10 seconds later or whatever is when I registered that it's gone this very spooky
Yes.
music. So does that start even then? Yeah, and it's like it puts me in mind of the Twilight Zone, which obviously it's, it predates the Twilight
Yeah.
Zone.
And they then we see the shot outside, and they basically throw the two of them into the snowbank. Literally, I mean,
Yeah, with a lot of laughter from the
correct.
onlooking, drinking crowd.
That's
Yeah.
right. Everyone is very
Nasty
happy with
crowd.
it. Very. Well, come on, they're
Yeah.
all drinking at Nick's, so what do you expect? And then as we see them land in the snow, the shot changes again, and we're back inside of the bar, and Nick starts playing with the cash register and goes, and he's making ringing the bell, and he goes, "Get me, I'm giving out wings," and everyone laughs around him.
Yeah. Get me. Giving out wings. It's a good bit of business. Yeah, but it does when we're back out here with this it's just mentioning the Twilight Zone there, and it just put me thinking that like this is a very Twilight Zone scenario, this part of the movie, getting to see a world where you don't exist and like walking up to everybody. It's like Rod Serling could have written a lot of the stuff in this, and I wonder was it an influence on Rod because yeah, just the more I thought about it, like going, oh, why is everybody talking like that? What's going on? But now don't you start, and all of this stuff. Like it seems really like something out of one of the Twilight Zones. And yeah, I got quite into binging Twilight Zone a couple of years ago when our fellow community member Bubba Wheat was doing his time loop season where he was doing all the time loop episodes of it. And yeah, so it just I got really into the I just love the tone and the feel of old TV like that. And this really gives me those kind of feelings. It really hits those marks.
And as they're standing up, from the snow and brushing themselves off, so Clarence says to George, "You see, George, you weren't there to stop Gower from putting that poison into the capsules." And George looks at him and he goes, "What do you mean I wasn't there? I remember distinctly." And then he starts looking around and he sees the name of the sign of the bar, which is Nick's. He goes, "Hey, what's going on around here? What? What?" And he's very, very confused. And that's basically how the minute ends. So people will have to come
He's
back
he
tomorrow to
doesn't
find out if he stays confused. For how much longer is he going to stay confused?
Yeah, how long can George stretch this confusion on?
That's right.
Spoiler, a long time.
Yes,
But
that's true.
what I keep reminding myself when I'm saying it's like, oh, come on, George, is that like in if this happened for real in real life, I think we would all resist it to the last, because entertaining the notion that you're suddenly in an alternate world is very, you want to avoid getting to the craziness of
Correct.
that.
I definitely agree with you on that. All right. So every Monday, we have a segment called Capra Monday, where my guests will give their top five Frank Capra movies. So, Austin, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up to one if you have, because many of my
Yeah,
guests
I'm in
don't.
trouble. Many of your guests haven't seen five Frank Capra
That's right.
movies. Yeah, I was expecting, I was wondering if that was the case, because I was really like, really? I was going through the IMDb, and I cannot put my hand on my heart and say I've seen any of these. I've seen like bits and pieces. I think I saw what you call Mr. Smith Goes to Washington as a boy. I've definitely seen part of that, like Why We Fight, World War II kind of the documentary slash propaganda slash motivational thing. I saw it in part of another documentary. So like that's as close as I can get. And a real shame that there's there's some of these movies that I'm like, yeah, I've always meant to see it. Well, it's been on my list. But yeah, I have literally the only film I can say on that list that I've definitely seen, beginning to end, is It's a Wonderful Life. So you've shamed me into making sure to put some more Capra on my list.
Okay. All right. That is fair. So, Austin, you want to tell people where they can find Austin Pryor?
I do not use social media very much, but if you go to malkovichminute.net, you can find my Matrix chat room and my Mastodon account, and there's probably some links to more obscure platforms like Facebook and X. But that's yeah, they're there, but you won't, if you particular if you're persistent, you can catch up with me. And but also my just post something to me. This is what I discovered. We've got a great system in Ireland called Air Codes, where every resident and business has its own code. So all you need to do is put Austin Pryor H91T38Y on an envelope, and in Ireland on an envelope, and send me something. Send me the deeds to your house, or some other important personal document, or just write me a letter by hand in fountain pen, preferably, or antique typewriter. I'll accept.
All right, and while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on those obscure social networks that Austin just mentioned. You can find me on X and on Twitter. X is Twitter. You can find me on X and Facebook, and you can also find me on my website, moveaboutminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.